As we have mentioned, Dan McLeod and Stephen Bielich, and Stephen was able to go with four of our other members on some mission trips this summer, and we wanted to be able to allow them to present some reports about the work that they were able to do, because this is work that we have been able to do because of this congregation's love for mission work and spreading the gospel. You know that through our Mission Sunday contributions that we have every year, including this year back in January, that there's money set aside for efforts like this, not to obviously pay for them in their entirety, but to help out with some of the expenses that are involved in those. And so we look forward to hearing Dan and Stephen both talk about what the works that they were able to be involved in. In Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 10, in the midst of talking about Jesus, in the midst of talking about Jesus suffering in his death for us and tasting death for everyone, and in the midst of Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 10 talking about the fact that Jesus had come for that very purpose, it says in the middle of that verse, he had done that in order to bring many sons to glory. Well, that's why Dan went to the South Pacific. And that's why Stephen and a group of our members went down to El Salvador, was to bring many sons to glory. That's why any of us go out and teach the gospel, not for our own glory, but for God's glory, in order that people might be won for the glory of God and spend eternity with him. So I look forward, Dan's going to report on his trip first, and then Stephen. And then after Stephen's report, please make sure you stay for your Cornerstone group meetings.
You cannot go somewhere with Robert Martin and not come back excited. I'm going to have to get treatment to get unexcited. I say that teasingly, but as you all know, Robert is a wonderful man. And spending a week with him was a great blessing for me. I came back from that trip excited, but also deeply encouraged by the fact that he loves the work that he does. And he wanted me to especially tell you that he loves this congregation. And I can tell you that he means it. There was countless times that he brought up people in this congregation, the elders, the deacons, the preachers, and his relationship in the past with Dan. And that brother loves you all. And he wanted me to especially tell you that. So this was a great experience for me. And we went to the island group of Tuvalu. And it took me a while to learn to pronounce it. The pronunciation's in the middle vowel. But it's in the vastness of the Pacific Ocean. And this is a view from Google Earth. You know, if you were out in the space somewhere and you looked at the Earth from this view, what do you see? Almost half the Earth is covered by the Pacific Ocean. It's 32% of the Earth's surface. If you like statistics, these are fascinating. Over 60 million square miles. Keep that in mind for just a moment. If you combine all the land on the earth together in one place, the Pacific Ocean is still larger. There's more than 25,000 islands in the Pacific. And it's over 11,000 miles from east to west. That's just about the diameter, half the distance from the earth. So where is Tuvalu? You would not be able to see it from space. Tuvalu is in the South Pacific Ocean, so it's south of the equator, and it's just north of Fiji. It's about 625 miles north of Fiji. The only airline route to Tuvalu is through Fiji. There's two flights a week. There's only 50 people on the plane. And by the way, one of them is the mechanic to fix the plane. Because if it has a problem in Tuvalu, there's nobody there to fix it. And if you did the math there, that's no more than 5,000 people can get to or from Tuvalu in 1 year. And statistics say that there's only was about 1,000 visitors to Tuvalu last year. And that's the aircraft that you fly in and out of. And Robert, by the way, says that's a wonderful aircraft compared to what he used to fly in. It takes about 42 hours travel time to get there. Now, that's counting layovers and everything, but it's a long way. And that's about 8,800 miles flight distance in one direction. The word Tuvalu means nine in the Tuvaluan language. And it means nine because there's nine island groups. And there's actually only eight of them that are inhabited. You remember that 10 million square mile number I gave you a minute ago? All of the inhabitable land in Tuvalu takes up 10 square miles. That's how tiny this area is. There's a population of about 12,000, and it's about the 12th smallest country in the world. Funafuti is the capital, and it's also one of the main islands. And there's about 9,000 people living on that one island. And the about is because many of these islanders come and go to other island groups. And that island is about 3 square miles. That's an aerial view of the island, and you can see the airstrip running the length of it. The widest part of that island is about 700 yards. This island is smaller than Singer Island, for those of you who live here. There's no freshwater sources on this island at all. Everything has to come from the rain. So there's large cisterns that catch the rainwater. And the highest elevation is about 15 feet. One of the only things that Tuvalu is famous about nowadays, one of the two things, one is the so-called global warming. Tuvalu has what they call the king tide that occurs every February. And the king tide almost submerges the entire island. And according to one of the people that has lived there, his parents were 101 years old. That's always occurred. So I don't know about the global warming part. The other thing they're famous for is that 8 of their seamen today are being held hostage by the Somalis, Somalian pirates. So let's keep them in our prayers. Now, why would anyone care about Tuvalu? I want you to listen carefully to this.
Okay. So se chino eta ritonu ka pa pa songi na ia e fa ka rongina ko te chino se eta ritonu e se fa ka rongina a tino eta ritonu e fa ka rato a fa ka ronga te nei mana e tule ni rato te moni ka te tui mo fa i pate rato ki ngana ka skese o la e se i rongi rato a fa ye puke ki ngata me e inu me poisinu e se e se pa ka rabla e tu puke rato e tu kura to lima e lunga tino masaki.
I did that just for Tracy to see if she could translate that. That's the Tuvaluan language being spoken by one of your brothers, Tassini. And Tassini's reading from a Bible. I didn't have the opportunity to put all my pictures in here. I took over 1,000 photographs. But Tassini's Bible is almost worn out, and it's a Tuvaluan Bible. That man knows his Bible. So why Tuvalu? There's 9,000 precious souls in the whole island group of this tiny remote island. And there's right now 6 of your brothers and sisters that are there. And Isaiah 55, chapter or verse 11, it says, "So shall my word be that goes forth from my mouth. It shall not return to me void, but it shall accomplish what I please, and it shall prosper in the thing which I sent it." Because of your support of Robert Martin, there is the gospel in Tuvalu. The Lord's church exists there, and it's growing. And I'll tell you a story about this not so young man, but young in the faith. His name is Alisi, and Alisi is 74 years old. Robert first went to the island of Tuvalu in 1985, and he met that man, Alisi, at that time. Alisi is, even though he doesn't look very strong or fit, at 74, he still climbs in attics and runs wires, a lot like David Brown. He's one of the island's only licensed electricians, and he was a seaman for many years. But he's also part of what's called the Congregationalist Church there. That's descended from what was called the London Missionary Society, who taught many people in those islands. They know their Bible well, but as Alisi told us after studying with us and studying with Robert in 1985, they don't preach the entire truth. And it's through Robert's teaching and persistence from 1985 until when we were there, Elise was baptized. He's a wonderful elderly man, and there's a lot to be learned from him. This is another one of the brothers there, Tassini. I mentioned the seamen a minute ago. Tuvalu is a small country with almost no import or export. So what they've done is they've taught seamanship in a maritime school there to all their young people. Those young people are deployed on merchant marine vessels all over the world. And they send their money back home, and it's actually about one-fifth of their gross national product is the money they send home. And that's how those eight seamen became to be hostages to the Somali pirates. So Tassini's now retired from that work, but he's at home. That's his granddaughter with him. And this is Palau and Susie. They're married. Palau is a ship captain, now retired. But Palau was taught in 1985 and was baptized. And the story about Palau is one of persistence. Robert taught him back then. He was baptized. Robert came back to the islands a number of times. And then when Robert started the Pacific Islands Bible College, he turned the work over to Randy English. Randy English came back a number of times, and the work was turned over to someone else. And the someone else didn't go back. So Palau, and this was over a period of about 8 years, Palau sent the most encouraging and discouraging letter at the same time to Robert saying, "Please, Robert, come back. We need to be taught." So these young brethren in the faith begged Robert to come back. And that happened this past February, where Robert came back with one of the members from Forest Park, held a group of Bible classes and meetings, both for Palau and Susie and Tassini, and at that time baptized two other people. So the work goes on now because Robert's brought the gospel back there to help strengthen and encourage these people. And this is Elise, the elderly man that I mentioned. On this trip, Robert and I taught about seven Bible classes in the evenings. Every evening that we were there, we had a free Bible class. There was about 14 people each night, and it ranged from the acting attorney general from the islands of Tuvalu, the local bank manager, and many individuals that were very knowledgeable in their Bibles, and I can say that by the questions that they asked. Every one of them was truly respectful and wanted to hear the truth. We taught three special classes just to help strengthen the brothers there. And believe me, they were very, very grateful for those classes. We worshiped with them, and in Tuvaluan tradition, we worshiped on the mats on the ground in the living area of Palau's house. And then we passed out Bible correspondence courses every day. And I got to tell you that I think we met every person on that island. And here's some of the children that are there. And I was especially impressed by the children. And at some point, I'd love to talk to the elders about potentially going back and just teaching the children. The people of Tuvalu are wonderful people. You can't say that about every nation. You can't always say that about our nation. They are warm and friendly. You can imagine 9,000 people packed in a very small area. No one ever spoke to us in an unkind manner. And I say no one. Every day at 6:30 p.m. is a special time for them, and they call it Tsimita. And it's almost comical, but the bells that they ring today are acetylene tanks that are strung up, and they ring the bell at 6:30 p.m. In the olden days, if you were walking from one village to another and that bell rang, you had to get right to your village or stop, because that was the time when the village would take time to worship. They would have a devotional. They would sing songs, or they'd just gather together as a family. That still goes on, however. It's not nearly as strict as it used to be. They are open to hearing God's word, as we saw when we were there. And that was especially encouraging to me, having seen so many people that don't care about God's word. It was just so refreshing. We handed out tracts. Not a single one of the tracts we handed out was thrown away. When we came back after handing them out to one group of men, the three men were standing there speaking, this is about an hour later, speaking to each other about the contents of those tracts. And when they have been taught, they obey, as we can see from Elise and his baptism. And here's one more passage, and I hope it works. That one may not work. But anyway, this is Elise reading in Tuvalu in Romans chapter 1, verse 16. For I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it's the power of God to salvation for everyone who believes, for the Jew first and also for the Greek. So what can you do? Next Sunday, I will have the address for those young Christians, and I would like everyone to write cards to them like we've been doing. I'm going to send a package over with some photographs that I took, and I'd like to send those cards to them. You can send emails, and I'll also have an email address for them. And actually, Tuvalu does have the internet, although it's very slow. You can help prepare some Bible school materials, because I committed to them that when I came back, I would try to get together some lessons for Susie to teach the young children that are children of the members there. And you can pray for them. These people are about as isolated from the world as you can get. It's hard to get there, and it's so very far away. So please pray for them always. And I especially pray for Robert and his family. Again, Robert so often talked about this congregation, his gratefulness for your support of all the work that he does. And while Robert will never brag about this, and it's nothing really that he would brag about, he's got two more island groups before he can say that he has touched every island nation in the Pacific Islands in his lifetime with the gospel of Christ. That is a tremendous accomplishment. And you would be greatly encouraged by his enthusiasm, which he goes out and teaches. His love for Mary and his family and the dedication for him to be away from them so long is really something else. So keep Robert and his family in your prayers. And again, for the people in the members of the church there, Palau and Susie, Tassini, Elise, and Penelope. I wasn't able to get a picture of Penelope. There was one other lady that was baptized who since moved to another island group, so she's no longer there. So thank you from my bottom of my heart for giving me the opportunity to go. It was extremely encouraging. I've kept this short on purpose. I've got about 1,000 more pictures I could show you. The children are just wonderful there, and it's really a beautiful place in its own way. But the people are just wonderful people. So thank you for letting me go and for the encouragement it brought me. And for working with Robert. I forgot about that. That was an especial treat.
I'm excited about the opportunities that are before us with what's going to happen down in South America with two of our members leaving soon. I just came back from the Caribbean lectureship. I find it amazing what's going on there. After hearing what's going on in the South Pacific, I'm kind of like, well, could I work a trip into there too? And if you know me well enough, you can't get me to shut up if I start talking about La Palma. So I know none of you want to ask. That's why they said they would like for me to present, because I can talk about it all. I just can't tell you how much I can talk about it. There have been 12 members of this congregation in the past 5 years who've gone to La Palma. La Palma is on the northern border of El Salvador, just about 4 miles away from Honduras. I was not there when the Honduran situation arose, but Ralph McClure was there. McClure was there and said it was quite interesting to watch this major highway shut down. But El Salvador is where 12 members have been in the last 4 or 5 years, and 5 of us went this year. I pray that what I speak and say tonight would be representing them and their thoughts and what they would want to present. On the last page of my newsletter about the La Palma trip this year, I wrote the following. Help. Call the police. My heart has been stolen. What can I say for you to really catch a glimpse of the experience that working in La Palma can give you? I can never impart in words the feeling of love, warmth, and caring which the people of La Palma and Ocotepeque provide. Nor can I impart in words the feeling of loss in knowing that it will be one more year before I am able to return. When I was a child growing up in Florida, I would spend part of my summer in Louisiana with my brother and go to summer camp there. During the year, my parents would tell me that if I was not talking about the past summer at camp, I was talking about the upcoming summer and my time at camp. Well, so too is the feeling of La Palma. If not looking back in remembrance, I am looking forward to the next trip to work with the school and with the church. Last year when I was speaking, I told you about the unofficial motto, and it was doors slammed open. Typically, you know the expression of doors slammed shut, and it would indicate that, you know, there's a quick desire to close the door, to separate yourself from something. Yet God has shown how quickly that He's able to open wide the doors of opportunity in the La Palma region. So last year, we were speaking about doors slammed open. Well, my new thought and the unofficial motto that I would say for this year is, you can't outpray God. Let me just show you a little bit of the example of what I mean by telling you a little quick history about La Palma. 5 years ago, a small group of people traveled to this town in northern El Salvador, and they recognized the church was not located in the region. They did discover one lady, Alicia, and she was a member of the church, and her sister, by the way, those of you who have been there, is Reina and Sonia. One sad story to report, on Thursday evening, Alicia and her husband Franklin and the two children were in San Ignacio for a festival or an event in the Central Park. There are a lot of trees there. No storm, no reason why, no strong winds or anything, but a tree limb fell, injured Alicia, and it crushed and killed Franklin. And they had his funeral yesterday. Franklin was the first person to provide for the church building. Those of you who've been in the old church building, that was Franklin's building. But they just are at a sense of loss right now. But Alicia was the first person that they met who recognized, that they recognized was a member of the church, and they saw the need for establishing the church there. Two recent graduates of the San Salvador School of Preaching, which is now known as the Miramonte School of Preaching, were hired to work in La Palma. And in the ensuing years, here's what's occurred in just 5 years of growth. The church has grown to currently having about 140 members. They've started a children's program. Across the border in Honduras, in the town of Ocotepeque, they have started or working with that church and helped it to grow and started a church, a children's program there. In La Palma, they started a school for grades K through 4, started that in 2007, and every year they have added a new school year, a school grade rather. A preaching school was founded there last year, and just recently, last month, the church and the school moved into new property, which provides for massive security. And the future plans call for a daycare center. A lot of the mothers they discovered are going to work and leaving their children, some of them very, very small, at home alone. And so they would like to start a daycare program that might help provide for those children. And also, in a moment, I'll speak about a children's home that they're looking to start. First of all, remind you, you can't outpray God. The children's program was begun, and when they began it, they began to measure and weigh the children. They wanted to see the condition of the children. People would in the United States would be sending $25 a month that would provide for food and medicines and vitamins. And of course, any help that you give to one child is helping an entire family. Well, the evidence became clear because the underdeveloped and underweight and undernourished and impoverished children were beginning to show signs very quickly that they were healthy and they were within the age appropriate weight and development levels. The infections and parasites and the other maladies that they began to have, that they had, were beginning to be reduced and in some cases even eliminated. So no longer were the children being weighed and measured. The proof had been shown. The children's program was working. It's true. You can't outpray God. Time does not allow me to tell you of how one bag of food can help 8-year-old Christina and her 64-year-old mother Maria. Yeah, you heard that right. 8-year-old Christina and her 64-year-old mother, Maria. I asked once, what does she do for a living? Not much. They live off that one bag of food mostly, and what other things that might be provided. Nor can I tell you about 11-year-old Jocelyn and 12-year-old Geraldo, who live with their grandmother, along with 12 other children that she's pulled off the streets. You see, Jocelyn and Geraldo's parents said they have nothing to do with them and left them in care with their mother. And that mother has gone and pulled other people off the street. it's amazing what she's able to do. And because of those bags of children, those bags of food for those children, what it provides for that family. You just can't outpray God. Well, several churches in the United States were involved in the work. They were taking care of the children. They saw that their spiritual needs were being taken care of. And they were helping the church in a lot of areas. The physical and spiritual needs were being met, but they began to question, what about the educational needs? So in September of 2006, someone asked this question, could it be possible to start a Christian school? So prayers were lifted up, and they asked God for guidance. Should the work of the mission expand into having a school? Why, the cost for starting a private school is $5,000. Well, the Minister of Education said, I like Christian education. You want to start a school? Start it. So 5 months after that first interest in the school, the La Palma Christian School opened in February of 2009. They opened with a K through 4 school, and every year they've added on one extra grade. Now, next year with the 7th grade will be a little bit of more requirements, and so they're working to get that done. Rachel Fuller was one of the people that went with us, and she was very involved, and she learned a lot of Spanish, but she was very involved in education. She's going to be a school teacher, and she also got to work on that, you all know that teacher look, you know, when the teacher has that special look and all. I think she worked really hard, and she practiced on this bird with her special look. You can't outpray God. Are you catching a little pattern here? With the growth of the church and the outreach into the surrounding towns that the medical missions would provide, the word of God began to spread and more men were needed. They were needed to be trained to be taught the gospel and to help plant churches in the area. So 5 towns in El Salvador and 2 in Honduras were found to be ready to plant a church, but preachers were needed. So in August of 2008, here comes that question. Should or could we start a school of preaching? Well, what do you know? You lift the prayer up and you can't outpray God, because a room became available with high-speed internet, and Texas Gulf Coast Bible Institute said, we can set up classes for you. And so 1 month later, in September of 2008, the first classes of the La Palma School of Preaching were conducted with 3 students. And very soon, a graduate from that school will be going to one of the towns in the area to assist the Christians to establish a church, because that motto is still the same. You can't outpray God. I've enlarged this one picture of Tony sitting in the home of Erica and Gabrielle. Count your many blessings. Do you see the tin roof and the tin wall? Do you see the wall in the back where the TV is? It's made of mud. The floor, it's swept clean, but it's just dirt. But they're a wonderful couple. You cannot, when you are blessed, outpray God. Well, both the church and the school began to outgrow their buildings. What seemed to be appropriate locations when they first started, they outgrew quickly, but the desire to move into another facility just didn't seem important to justify the need to go ahead and, you know, maybe find another building. But God had other plans. In December of 2008, the Minister of Education came to them and said that La Palma Christian School does not meet the minimum space per student requirements, and they have to have plans in place in 3 months by March of 2009, and they have to implement and be in compliance with those by June of 2009. In other words, in 6 short months, they have to be out of their building and somewhere else. The school and church would have to move to another location, and possibly the same location. But where? And again, the question was, is there a property nearby that could allow for the current worship of the church, allow for the daily activities of the school, and could allow for future growth of both? Well, prayers were again lifted up to God, asking for help and guidance. A small team was dispatched in February to find a location that meets these needs. Several options were made available, and it seems like each time one was dismissed for one reason or the other, and it brought the choice down to just one property. But again, would the landlord allow for a long-term lease? Would he allow for remodeling and new construction to begin? Well, do you remember that unofficial model? You can't outpray God. So, they found a property, and that new property provides an increase in the square footage by 369% over the old property. It had buildings on it available for immediate, I had buildings on it for immediate occupancy. It had a building space that they could put in a new church building. It had space for future building, any plans and needs. It had a 12-foot high security fence, I know, because that's me up there, to provide security for both the school and the church. It had room to house the school of preaching and to bring the storage that was held in other locations of the mission supplies, bring it all together. The new property provides for the current and future needs. It provides the mission to have one place that's secured and localized, and it has space for constructing things in the future. And to add to the benefit of the new location, the landlord said he would give a 12-year automatic renewable lease, gave permission to build anything that's needed on the property, and the option to buy the property in the future. You can't outpray God. Well, the property is beautiful. And if you're on the backside, this is the view that you see. The property drops down to the river, and you might be able to see that on the other side of the river there as the hills roll up, it drops down to the river. Plenty of room to grow. If you look out from the front, and they are now in the process of building onto the school building, a second floor, if you look out from the second floor that will be built very soon, that's the view to the front. And I took a picture and made a panoramic view of standing between the school building and the church building so that you can see what is the front yard. Now, it's a lot different from there, but you can see the high fence, and it's a shutting gate. And there's a building there that's the classroom building. Once again, you cannot outpray God. He's going to answer. Well, the mission effort is alive, it's active, and it shows the evidence of God's love to the people of this area. When a prayer has been requested about what work can be done and how a need can be met, God has answered it with more of ample evidence of His hand at work. In May of this year, Ralph McClure prayed about the possibility of a children's home. He knows of the need for such a facility in La Palma. So one night, and I believe it was a Wednesday night, before going to bed that night, he prayed specifically and asked the question, God, might this be an endeavor that this mission trip could get involved in? The next morning, he received a phone call from a church. The eldership had been reworking their mission funds, and they had a lump sum amount, and they had a commitment to a monthly contribution to use in the mission field, but only if it would be used for a children's home. They had heard about the work in La Palma. They had asked Ralph if the mission leadership might consider a children's home be established in La Palma. And if so, they had a lump sum to give and a monthly commitment. You can't outpray God. Five members of the church, Maria Hackshaw, Aaron Ellisey, Brad Schelt, worked the first week. Rachel and I worked for 2 weeks. The primary function of this work this year was a little different, the physical move and setup of the church building on the new property. Construction of the church auditorium had just been completed the first week in June. And so the work that was needed was to finalize the building and get it ready for the opening ceremony or the opening worship service that second Sunday. So a lot of the work involved the sound system and the stereo projection system and the video projection system. The first worship would be taking place in just a few days. Rachel and I were able to participate in an opening worship where people from throughout the region and the nation came to worship, and they said that they counted, and I counted pretty close to the number, about 440 people in attendance that day. The computer lab had new desks and shelves that were constructed. Wiring was run to create a local area network. The school, the preaching school, and the church are all hardwired together. The church auditorium will be able to function as a large classroom for the school as well as for the church, and to be able to project and to receive information from other countries. One desire is to hold Bible classes and worship and seminars and workshops that could be simulcast from other locations. Another plan is to be using teachers both locally as well as here in the United States to hold English classes, teaching using the Bible as the textbook. Even like our own brother Douglas here could be teaching Bible classes or his English classes here and have them simulcast into the church there in La Palma. Yeah, I forgot one click. In-home visits were done to encourage and edify the members of the church. Maria, Rachel, and I on Monday visited those homes, and Rachel and Maria continued in that throughout the week with home visits. They worked with the children's program and distributions. Unfortunately, the big distribution of the two semi-trucks was delayed. The political wheels in El Salvador ground to a halt, literally. The U.S. Embassy was at a loss on what to do to help. The newly elected El Salvadorian president was micromanaging the situation, and even today the two containers sit in a customs yard in San Salvador, though there is possible opportunity for it to be brought out tomorrow morning. But it's been sitting there since it left on May 20th. It's been sitting since the first week in June, and hopefully it will be able to be brought out very soon. Brad was superb in his work and working with the local emergency response and fire and police departments. The new ambulance that was donated to the mission team was delivered in this spring. And so Brad established a great rapport with the various departments that brought the name of the church to the forefront. Aaron was able to work as his interpreter for one day, and he helped in work of the new school. And Brad added the following comments. I think it is quite impressive the amount of things that can be accomplished with small amounts of money. Look at all that has been established and what they're doing to create more, such as an orphanage. The connections that the mission team leaders have with the local leaders of La Palma, such as the mayor, the fire and police chief, is so very critical. The fact that we can ship items such as ambulances down there successfully also proves the connections that are present. It is so important to have the politicians on your side in a foreign country when they are trying to preach the gospel. That's the most impressive thing that I saw in La Palma. Obviously, the given observations that are present in many foreign countries is that the Bible is not perverted there, and what they are shown, they believe. That puts so much more importance on the church being the leader of Christianity rather than some denominational religion. As far as the emergency services personnel, they knew that my trip was being made possible from the church, and they realized that the ambulance was provided by the Church of Christ. The church is not unheard of in that community by any means, and that includes the government workers alongside the government leaders. In May, they dedicated the building where the ambulance is sitting, and you can see the ambulance out in front of the tourism and the fire and chief, the chief of police and the fire chief's location. But you can also see I have the arrow pointing to the plaque that's above it, and you can prominently see that they list in thank yous the Church of Christ, and they even have a symbol of the cross in the Bible down below. That's right there at the Central Park in La Palma. The work done in the name of the Lord in this region is known by a lot of people, and throughout the town, whether it's from the professional and political levels down to the shopkeepers, they know the church. The church is well respected, and the people are grateful for the mission teams that go down every 3 months. Over in Ocotepeque, the growth of the church is just as strong. They, too, have outgrown their current location. They've been meeting in the garage of the preacher. Last year, they knocked out a wall because of their growth to extend into another room. Still don't have enough room. So they, too, just 2, 3, 4 weeks ago, broke ground and laid the foundation for their new building. Imagine trying to put 40 people and 30 children in a one-car garage. It's pretty tight. It's pretty hot in there, too. Bible studies were conducted each night with several people in the community. One was with a woman who had been invited to worship, and she said she wanted to learn more about the church. Another was with a couple who worked in a pizza parlor next to the hotel, and they participated in several studies after they closed the business at night. In total, there were 3 baptisms and 5 restorations during the mission effort. During the second week, Rachel and other teens visited with Erica and Gabrielle. That was the picture I showed you earlier. They're new members of the church. She was diagnosed with cancer, and she began her chemo treatments while we were there. She became very, very ill and needed assistance with her family. They have small children, and the teens were very active in going and helping to take care of Erica and the children while Gabrielle was working every single day. That was supposed to start, and I was hoping it would. Last year, Kara and Kelly Afron worked to build steps, a ramp, and a porch for Claudia, a young woman who has cerebral palsy. This was able to aid the father to help get Claudia safely in and out of the house. She was not able to walk and had to be carried from her bed. The ramp and porch that was built gave easy access to the bathroom, which is located outside of the home. Members of the team last year also constructed a sling and a pull-up system that allowed her to lift herself out of bed and get into a wheelchair and to do some physical therapy exercises. Excuse me. I was hoping this movie would show you that Morris had built this ramp. Last year at this time, she was barely able to pull herself out of bed. They worked with her for the past year, and I wish the movie would show you that she walked all the way to the end and you could hear Ralph McClure going, "Bueno, bueno, bueno," because she's been able to, through the efforts of the mission team, to walk. Well, how can you help? Brothers and sisters, here's how you can help. There's always a need for people to contribute. There's always a need for those children, and I cannot tell you the number of huggers that I have and children that are just so loving and wonderful and to see the help that they have. And I know that Maria Hackshaw has been very involved, and she's got several children that she is already involved in helping to support. You can travel and work there. There's four opportunities a year. I can only go as a teacher, only go in June, but there are four opportunities. September is the next one, December, and then January, February is the time they have the medical mission. Well, what kind of skills do I need to go there? Well, they're really hard. You just have to love the Lord and be willing to work. That's not really hard. That's something we do already. Because they can take your skills, whatever they are, and put them to use. And no, you don't have to speak Spanish. You can go there and just enjoy and work and have a wonderful, wonderful time. This week, I'm going to be sending out by email my 2009 newsletter. There's a lot of information in there, and if you're interested in that, if your email address in the church directory is not current and you would like to receive that email, please give me your information about your email, and you see mine that's there, and I'll be able to present it to you. I thank you for the opportunity to go, and the support has been tremendous. I'm grateful for the people who've gone every year and those who've expressed interest in wanting to go in the future, and I will always be glad to talk about it, and I just pray that you might have some interest in asking some questions of Rachel or Aaron or of Brad or Maria about what went on, because the Lord, you can't outpray Him. And it seems like in this place, in Honduras and in El Salvador, you ask it, God's already saying, I've been waiting for you, I've got it already. Because the doors are being slammed open, no matter what you ask, the answer's coming up. Because the Word of God is strong and alive and growing in a little region called La Palma. Thank you for your time.